Chapter 4. Dawn was still a hint of whiteness in the east when the army was again on the march. Tribesmen had raced into camp, their steeds reeling from the long ride, to report the desert horde encamped at the Well of Altaku. So through the hills the soldiers pushed hastily, leaving the wagon trains to follow. Yasmela rode with them. Her eyes were haunted. The nameless horror had been taking even more awful shape since she had recognized the coin in the Shemite's hand the night before, one of those secretly molded by the degraded Zugite cult bearing the features of a man dead 3,000 years. The way wound between ragged cliffs and gaunt crags towering over narrow valleys. Here and there villages perched, huddles of stone huts plastered with mud. The tribesmen swarmed out to join their kin, so that before they had traversed the hills the host had been swelled by some 3,000 wild archers. Abruptly they came out of the hills and caught their breath at the vast expanse that swept away to the south. On the southern side the hills fell away sheerly, marking a distinct geographical division between the Kothian uplands and the southern desert. The hills were the rim of the uplands, stretching in an almost unbroken wall. Here they were bare and desolate, inhabited only by the Zahimi clan, whose duty it was to guard the caravan road. Beyond the hills the desert stretched bare, dusty, lifeless. Yet beyond its horizon lay the Well of Altaku and the horde of Natok. The army looked down on the pass of Shamla, through which flowed the wealth of the north and the south, and through which had marched the armies of Koth, Karaja, Shem, Turan, and Stygia. Here the sheer wall of the rampart was broken. Promontories ran out into the desert, forming barren valleys, all but one of which were closed on the northern extremity by rugged cliffs. This one was the pass. It was much like a great hand extended from the hills. Two fingers parted formed a fan-shaped valley. The fingers were represented by a broad ridge on either hand, the outer sides sheer, the inner steep-sloped. The vale pitched upward as it narrowed to come out on a plateau, flanked by gully-torn slopes. A well was there, and a cluster of stone towers occupied by the Zahimis. There Conan halted, swinging off his horse. He had discarded the plate armor for the more familiar chainmail. Thespides reined in and demanded, "Why do you halt?"
"We'll await them here," answered Conan.
"'Twere more knightly to ride out and meet them," snapped the count.
"They'd smother us with numbers," answered the Cimmerian. "Besides, there's no water out there. We'll camp on the plateau."
"My knights and I camp in the valley," retorted Thespides angrily. "We are the vanguard, and we, at least, do not fear a ragged desert swarm."
Conan shrugged his shoulders, and the angry nobleman rode away. Amelric halted in his bellowing order to watch the glittering company riding down the slope into the valley.
"The fools! Their canteens will soon be empty, and they'll have to ride back up to the well to water their horses."
"Let them be," replied Conan. "It goes hard for them to take orders from me. Tell the dog brothers to ease their harness and rest. We've marched hard and fast, watered the horses, and let the men munch."
No need to send out scouts. The desert lay bare to the gaze, though just now this view was limited by low-lying clouds which rested in whitish masses on the southern horizon. The monotony was broken only by a jutting tangle of stone ruins some miles out in the desert, reputedly the remnants of an ancient Stygian temple. Conan dismounted the archers and ranged them along the ridges with the wild tribesmen. He stationed the mercenaries and the Karaji spearmen on the plateau about the well. Further back, in the angle where the hill road debouched on the plateau, was pitched Yasmela's pavilion. With no enemy in sight, the warriors relaxed. Bassinets were doffed, coifs thrown back on mailed shoulders, belts let out. Rude jests flew back and forth as the fighting men gnawed beef and thrust their muzzles deep into ale jugs. Along the slopes the hillmen made themselves at ease, nibbling dates and olives. Amalric strode up to where Conan sat bareheaded on a boulder.
"Conan, have you heard what the tribesmen say about Natok? They say, 'Mitra, it's too mad to even repeat. What do you think?"
"Seeds rest in the ground for centuries without rotting sometimes," answered Conan. "But surely Natok is a man."
"I am not sure," grunted Amalric. At any rate, you've arranged your lines as well as a seasoned general could have done. It's certain Natok's devils can't fall on us unawares. Mitra, what a fog!
I thought it was clouds at first, answered Conan. See how it rolls.
What had seemed clouds was a thick mist moving northward like a great unstable ocean, rapidly hiding the desert from view. Soon it engulfed the Stygian ruins, and still it rolled onward. The army watched in amazement. It was a thing unprecedented, unnatural, and inexplicable.
No use sending out scouts, said Amalric disgustedly. They couldn't see anything. Its edges are near the outer flanks of the ridges. Soon the whole pass and these hills will be masked.
Conan, who had been watching the rolling mist with growing nervousness, bent suddenly and laid his ear to the earth. He sprang up with frantic haste, swearing.
Horses and chariots, thousands of them. The ground vibrates to their tread. Ho, there!
His voice thundered out across the valley to electrify the lounging men.
Burgonets and pikes, you dogs! Stand to your ranks!
At that, as the warriors scrambled into their lines, hastily donning headpieces and thrusting arms through shield straps, the mist rolled away as something no longer useful. It did not slowly lift and fade like a natural fog. It simply vanished, like a blown-out flame. One moment the whole desert was hidden with the rolling fleecy billows piled mountainously stratum above stratum. The next, the sun shone from a cloudless sky on a naked desert, no longer empty, but thronged with the living pageantry of war. A great shout shook the hills. At first glance, the amazed watchers seemed to be looking down upon a glittering, sparkling sea of bronze and gold, where steel points twinkled like a myriad stars. With the lifting of the fog, the invaders had halted as if frozen, in long, serried lines flaming in the sun. First was a long line of chariots, drawn by the great, fierce horses of Stygia, with plumes on their heads, snorting and rearing as each naked driver leaned back, bracing his powerful legs, his dusky arms knotted with muscles. The fighting men in the chariots were tall figures, their hawk-like faces set off by bronze helmets, crested with a crescent supporting a golden ball. Heavy bows were in their hands. No common archers these, but nobles of the south, bred to war and the hunt, who were accustomed to bringing down lions with their arrows. Behind these came a motley array of wild men on half-wild horses, the warriors of Kush, the first of the great black kingdoms of the grasslands south of Stygia. They were shining ebony, supple and lithe, riding stark naked and without bridle or saddle. After these rolled a horde that seemed to encompass all the desert. Thousands on thousands of the warlike sons of Shem, ranks of horsemen in scale mail corselets and cylindrical helmets, the Ashuri of Dnieper, Shumir, and Eruk, and their sister cities, wild white-robed hordes, the nomad clans. Now the ranks began to mill and eddy. The chariots drew off to one side while the main host came uncertainly onward. Down in the valley, the knights had mounted, and now Count Thespides galloped up the slope to where Conan stood. He did not deign to dismount, but spoke abruptly from the saddle.
The lifting of the mist has confused them. Now is the time to charge. The Kushites have no bows, and they mask the whole advance. A charge of my knights will crush them back into the ranks of the Shemites, disrupting their formation. Follow me. We will win this battle with one stroke.
Conan shook his head.
Were we fighting a natural foe, I would agree, but this confusion is more feigned than real, as if to draw us into a charge. I fear a trap.
Then you refuse to move?
Cried Thespides, his face dark with passion.
Be reasonable, expostulated Conan. We have the advantage of position.
With a furious oath, Thespides wheeled and galloped back down the valley, where his knights waited impatiently. Amalric shook his head.
You should not have let him return, Conan. Look there.
Conan sprang up with a curse. Thespides had swept in beside his men. They could hear his impassioned voice faintly, but his gesture toward the approaching horde was significant enough. In another instant, 500 lances dipped, and the steel-clad company was thundering down the valley. A young page came running from Yasmela's pavilion, crying to Conan in a shrill, eager voice,
My lord, the princess asks why you do not follow and support Count Thespides.
Because I am not so great a fool as he,
grunted Conan, reseating himself on the boulder and beginning to gnaw a huge beef bone.
"You grow sober with authority," quoth Amalric. "Such madness as that was always your particular joy."
"Aye, when I had only my own life to consider," answered Conan. "Now, what in hell?"
The horde had halted. From the extreme wing rushed a chariot, the naked charioteer lashing the steeds like a madman. The other occupant was a tall figure whose robe floated spectrally on the wind. He held in his arms a great vessel of gold, and from it poured a thin stream that sparkled in the sunlight. Across the whole front of the desert horde the chariot swept, and behind its thundering wheels was left, like the wake behind a ship, a long, thin, powdery line that glittered in the sands like the phosphorescent track of a serpent.
"That's Natok," swore Amalric. "What hellish seed is he sowing?"
The charging knights had not checked their headlong pace. Another 50 paces and they would crash into the uneven Kushite ranks, which stood motionless, spears lifted. Now the foremost knights had reached the thin line that glittered across the sands. They did not heed that crawling menace. But as the steel-shod hoofs of the horses struck it, it was as when steel strikes flint, but with more terrible result. A terrific explosion rocked the desert, which seemed to split apart along the strewn line with an awful burst of white flame. In that instant the whole foremost line of the knights was seen enveloped in that flame, horses and steel-clad riders withering in the glare like insects in an open blaze. The next instant the rear ranks were piling up on their charred bodies. Unable to check their headlong velocity, rank after rank crashed into the ruins. With appalling suddenness, the charge had turned into a shambles, where armored figures died amid screaming, mangled horses. Now the illusion of confusion vanished as the horde settled into orderly lines. The wild Kushites rushed into the shambles, spearing the wounded, bursting the helmets of the knights with stones and iron hammers. It was all over so quickly that the watchers on the slope stood dazed. And again the horde moved forward, splitting to avoid the charred waste of corpses. From the hills went up a cry,
"We fight not men, but devils!"
On either ridge the hillmen wavered. One rushed toward the plateau, froth dripping from his beard.
"Flee, flee!"
he slobbered.
"Who can fight Natok's magic?"
With a snarl, Conan bounded from his boulder and smote him with the beef bone. He dropped, blood starting from his nose and mouth. Conan drew his sword, his eyes slits of blue balefire.
"Back to your posts," he yelled. "Let another take a backward step and I'll shear off his head. Fight, damn you."
The rout halted as quickly as it had begun. Conan's fierce personality was like a dash of ice water in their blazing whirl of terror.
"Take your places,"
he directed quickly,
"and stand to it. Neither man nor devil comes up Shamla Pass this day."
Where the plateau rim broke to the valley slope, the mercenaries braced their belts and gripped their spears. Behind them the lancers sat their steeds, and to one side were stationed the Karaja spearmen as reserves. To Yasmela, standing white and speechless at the door of her tent, the host seemed a pitiful handful in comparison to the thronging desert horde. Conan stood among the spearmen. He knew the invaders would not try to drive a chariot charge up the pass in the teeth of the archers, but he grunted with surprise to see the riders dismounting. These wild men had no supply trains. Canteens and pouches hung at their saddle peaks. Now they drank the last of their water and threw their canteens away.
"This is the death grip," he muttered as the lines formed on foot. "I'd rather have had a cavalry charge, wounded horses bolt and ruin formations."
The horde had formed into a huge wedge, of which the tip was the Stygians and the body the mailed Asuri, flanked by the nomads. In close formation, shields lifted, they rolled onward, while behind them a tall figure in a motionless chariot lifted wide-robed arms in grisly invocation. As the horde entered the wide valley mouth, the hillmen loosed their shafts. In spite of the protective formation, men dropped by dozens. The Stygians had discarded their bows. Helmeted heads bent to the blast, dark eyes glaring over the rims of their shields, they came on in an inexorable surge, striding over their fallen comrades. But the Shemites gave back the fire, and the clouds of arrows darkened the skies. Conan gazed over the billowing waves of spears and wondered what new horror the sorcerer would invoke. Somehow he felt that Natok, like all of his kind, was more terrible in defense than in attack. To take the offensive against him invited disaster. But surely it was magic that drove the horde on in the teeth of death. Conan caught his breath at the havoc wrought in the on-sweeping ranks. The edges of the wedge seemed to be melting away, and already the valley was strewn with dead men. Yet the survivors came on like madmen, unaware of death. By the very numbers of their bows, they began to swamp the archers on the cliffs. Clouds of shafts sped upward, driving the hillmen to cover. Panic struck at their hearts at that unwavering advance, and they plied their bows madly, eyes glaring like trapped wolves. As the horde neared the narrower neck of the pass, boulders thundered down, crushing men by the scores, but the charge did not waver. Conan's wolves braced themselves for the inevitable concussion. In their close formation and superior armor, they took little hurt from the arrows. It was the impact of the charge Conan feared, when the huge wedge should crash against his thin ranks, and he realized now there was no breaking of that onslaught. He gripped the shoulder of a Zahimi who stood near.
"Is there any way by which mounted men can get down into the blind valley beyond that western ridge?"
"Aye, a steep, perilous path, secret and eternally guarded, but—"
Conan was dragging him along to where Amalric sat his great war horse.
"Amalric," he snapped, "follow this man. He'll lead you to yon outer valley. Ride down it, circle the end of the ridge, and strike the horde from the rear. Speak not, but go. I know it's madness, but we're doomed anyway. We'll do all the damage we can before we die. Haste!"
Amalric's mustache bristled in a fierce grin, and a few moments later his lancers were following the guide into a tangle of gorges leading off from the plateau. Conan ran back to the pikemen, sword in hand. He was not too soon. On either ridge, Shupra's hillmen, mad with anticipation of defeat, rained down their shafts desperately. Men died like flies in the valley, and all along the slopes, and with a roar and an irresistible upward surge, the Stygians crashed against the mercenaries. In a hurricane of thundering steel, the lines twisted and swayed. It was war-bred noble against professional soldier. Shields crashed against shields, and between them spears drove in and blood spurted. Conan saw the mighty form of Prince Cutaman across the sea of swords, but the press held him hard, breast to breast with dark shapes that gasped and slashed. Behind the Stygians, the Asuri were yelling and surging. On either hand, the nomads climbed the cliffs and came to hand grips with their mountain kin. All along the crests of the ridges, the combat raged in blind, gasping ferocity. Tooth and nail, frothing mad with fanaticism and ancient feuds, the tribesmen rent and slew and died. Wild hair flying, the naked Kushites ran howling into the fray. It seemed to Conan that his sweat-blinded eyes looked down into a rising ocean of steel that seethed and eddied, filling the valley from ridge to ridge. The fight was at a bloody deadlock. The hillmen held the ridges, and the mercenaries, gripping their dripping pikes, bracing their feet in the bloody earth, held the pass. Superior position and armor for a space balanced the advantage of overwhelming numbers, but it could not endure. Wave after wave of glaring faces and flashing spears surged up the slope, the Asuri filling the gaps in the Stygian ranks. Conan looked to see Amalric's lancers rounding the western ridge, but they did not come, and the pikemen began to reel back under the shocks. And Conan abandoned all hope of victory and of life. Yelling a command to his gasping captains, he broke away and raced across the plateau to the Karaja reserves, who stood trembling with eagerness. He did not glance toward Yasmela's pavilion. He had forgotten the princess. His one thought was the wild beast instinct to slay before he died.
"This day you become knights,"
he laughed fiercely, pointing with his dripping sword toward the hillmen's horses herded nearby.
"Mount and follow me to hell."
The hill steed reared wildly under the unfamiliar clash of the Kothic armor, and Conan's gusty laugh rose above the din as he led them to where the eastern ridge branched away from the plateau. 500 footmen, pauper patricians, younger sons, black sheep, on half-wild Shemite horses, charging an army down a slope where no cavalry had ever dared charge before. Past the battle-choked mouth of the pass, they thundered out onto the corpse-littered ridge. Down the steep slope they rushed, and a score lost their footing and rolled under the hoofs of their comrades. Below them, men screamed and threw up their arms, and the thundering charge ripped through them as an avalanche cuts through a forest of saplings. On through the close-packed throngs the Karajis hurtled, leaving a crushed-down carpet of dead. And then, as the horde writhed and coiled upon itself,
Amalric's lancers, having cut through a cordon of horsemen encountered in the outer valley, swept around the extremity of the western edge and smote the host in a steel-tipped wedge, splitting it asunder. His attack carried all the dazzling demoralization of a surprise on the rear. Thinking themselves flanked by a superior force and frenzied at the fear of being cut off from the desert, swarms of nomads broke and stampeded, working havoc in the ranks of their more steadfast comrades. These staggered, and the horsemen rode through them. Up on the ridges the desert fighters wavered, and the hillmen fell on them with renewed fury, driving them down the slopes. Stunned by surprise, the horde broke before they had a chance to see it was but a handful which assailed them. And once broken, not even a magician could weld such a horde again. Across the sea of heads and spears, Conan's madmen saw Amalric's riders forging steadily through the rout to the rise and fall of axes and maces, and a mad joy of victory exalted each man's heart and made his arms steel. Bracing their feet in the wallowing sea of blood, whose crimson waves lapped about their ankles, the pikemen in the pass mouth drove forward, crushing strongly against the milling ranks before them. The Stygians held, but behind them the press of the Asuri melted, and over the bodies of the nobles of the south, who died in their tracks to a man, the mercenaries rolled, to split and crumple the wavering mass behind. Up on the cliffs, old Shupras lay with an arrow through his heart. Amalric was down, swearing like a pirate, a spear through his mailed thigh. Of Conan's mounted infantry, scarce 150 remained in the saddle, but the horde was shattered. Nomads and mailed spearmen broke away, fleeing to their camp where their horses were, and the hillmen swarmed down the slopes, stabbing the fugitives in the back, cutting the throats of the wounded. In the swirling red chaos, a terrible apparition suddenly appeared before Conan's rearing steed. It was Prince Cutaman, naked but for a loincloth, his harness hacked away, his crested helmet dented, his limbs splashed with blood. With a terrible shout, he hurled his broken hilt full into Conan's face and, leaping, seized the stallion's bridle. The Cimmerian reeled in his saddle, half-stunned, and with awful strength the dark-skinned giant forced the screaming steed upward and backward, until it lost its footing and crashed into the muck of bloody sand and writhing bodies. Conan sprang clear as the horse fell, and with a roar Cutaman was on him. In that mad nightmare of battle, the barbarian never exactly knew how he killed his man. He only knew that a stone in the Stygian's hand crashed again and again on his bassinet, filling his sight with flashing sparks as Conan drove his dagger again and again into his foe's body without apparent effect on the prince's terrible vitality. The world was swimming to Conan's sight when, with a convulsive shudder, the frame that strained against his stiffened and then went limp. Reeling up, blood streaming down his face from under his dented helmet, Conan glared dizzily at the profusion of destruction which spread before him. From crest to crest the dead lay strewn, a red carpet that choked the valley. It was like a red sea, with each wave a straggling line of corpses. They choked the neck of the pass, they littered the slopes, and down in the desert the slaughter continued, where the survivors of the horde had reached their horses and streamed out across the waste, pursued by the weary victors. And Conan stood appalled as he noted how few of these were left to pursue. Then an awful scream rent the clamor. Up the valley a chariot came flying, making nothing of the heaped corpses. No horses drew it, but a great black creature that was like a camel. In the chariot stood Natok, his robes flying, and gripping the reins and lashing like mad crouched a black anthropomorphic being that might have been a monster ape. With a rush of burning wind, the chariot swept up the corpse-littered slope straight toward the pavilion where Yasmela stood alone, deserted by her guards in the frenzy of pursuit. Conan, standing frozen, heard her frenzied scream as Natok's long arm swept her up into the chariot. Then the grisly steed wheeled and came racing back down the valley, and no man dared speed arrow or spear lest he strike Yasmela, who writhed in Natok's arms. With an inhuman cry, Conan caught up his fallen sword and leaped into the path of the hurtling horror. But even as his sword went up, the forefeet of the black beast smote him like a thunderbolt and sent him hurtling a score feet away, dazed and bruised. Yasmela's cry came hauntingly to his stunned ears as the chariot roared by. A yell that had nothing of the human in its timbre rang from his lips as Conan rebounded from the bloody earth and seized the rein of a riderless horse that raced past him, throwing himself into the saddle without bringing the charger to a halt.
With mad abandon he raced after the rapidly receding chariot. He struck the levels flying and passed like a whirlwind through the Shemite camp. Into the desert he fled, passing clumps of his own riders and hard, spurring desert horsemen. On flew the chariot and on raced Conan, though his horse began to reel beneath him. Now the open desert lay all around them, bathed in the lurid, desolate splendor of sunset. Before him rose up the ancient ruins, and with a shriek that froze the blood in Conan's veins, the inhuman charioteer cast Natok and the girl from him. They rolled on the sand, and to Conan's dazed gaze, the chariot and its steed altered awfully. Great wings spread from a black horror that in no way resembled a camel, and it rushed upward into the sky, bearing in its wake a shape of blinding flame in which a black man-like shape gibbered in ghastly triumph. So quickly it passed that it was like the rush of a nightmare through a horror-haunted dream. Natok sprang up, cast a swift look at his grim pursuer, who had not halted but came riding hard with sword swinging low and spattering red drops, and the sorcerer caught up the fainting girl and ran with her into the ruins. Conan leaped from his horse and plunged after them. He came into a room that glowed with unholy radiance, though on the outside dusk was falling swiftly. On a black jade altar lay Yasmela, her naked body gleaming like ivory in the weird light. Her garments lay strewn on the floor as if ripped from her in brutal haste. Natok faced the Cimmerian, inhumanly tall and lean, clad in shimmering green silk. He tossed back his veil, and Conan looked into the features he had seen depicted on the Zugite coin.
"I blench, dog."
The voice was like a hiss of a giant serpent.
"I am Thugrakotan. Long I lay in my tomb, awaiting the day of awakening and release. The arts which saved me from the barbarians long ago likewise imprisons me, but I knew one would come in time, and he came to fulfill his destiny and to die as no man has died in 3,000 years. Fool, do you think you have conquered because my people are scattered, because I have been betrayed and deserted by the demon I enslaved? I am Thugrakotan, who shall rule the world despite your paltry gods. This desert is filled with my people. The demons of the earth shall do my bidding, as the reptiles of the earth obey me. Lust for a woman weakened my sorcery. Now the woman is mine, and feasting on her soul, I shall be unconquerable. Back, fool, you have not conquered Thugrakotan."
He cast his staff, and it fell at the feet of Conan, who recoiled with an involuntary cry. For as it fell, it altered horribly. Its outline melted and writhed, and a hooded cobra reared up hissing before the horrified Cimmerian. With a furious oath, Conan struck, and his sword sheared the horrid shape in half, and there at his feet lay only the two pieces of a severed ebon staff. Thugrakotan laughed awfully, and wheeling, caught up something that crawled loathsomely in the dust of the floor. In his extended hand, something alive writhed and slavered. No tricks of shadows this time. In his naked hand, Thugrakotan gripped a black scorpion, more than a foot in length, the deadliest creature of the desert, the stroke of whose spiked tail was instant death. Thugrakotan's skull-like countenance split in a mummy-like grin. Conan hesitated. Then, without warning, he threw his sword. Caught off guard, Thugrakotan had no time to avoid the cast. The point struck beneath his heart and stood out a foot behind his shoulders. He went down, crushing the poisonous monster in his grasp as he fell. Conan strode to the altar, lifting Yasmela in his blood-stained arms. She threw her white arms convulsively about his mailed neck, sobbing hysterically, and would not let him go.
"Crumbs, devils, girl," he grunted. "Loose me. 50,000 men have perished today, and there is work for me to do."
"No,"
she gasped, clinging with convulsive strength as barbaric for the instant as he in her fear and passion.
"I will not let you go. I am yours by fire and steel and blood. You are mine. Back there I belong to others. Here I am mine and yours. You shall not go."
He hesitated, his own brain reeling with the fierce upsurging of his violent passions. The lurid, unearthly glow still hovered in the shadowy chamber, lighting ghostily the dead face of Thugrakotan, which seemed to grin mirthlessly and cavernously at them. Out in the desert, in the hills among the oceans of dead, men were dying, were howling with wounds and thirst and madness, and kingdoms were staggering. Then all was swept away, by the crimson tide that rode madly in Conan's soul as he crushed fiercely in his iron arms the slim white body that shimmered like a witch-fire of madness before him.